Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. The official report of the 9/11 Commission was released in July of 2004, and it appears that the investigation, at least from the government's point of view, has been completed. This edition of Radio Curious deals with that report as we continue our discussion with David Ray Griffin, a professor emeritus from the Claremont School of Theology and the author of The 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions. As the title indicates, his book casts doubt on the completeness of the official 9/11 report and alleges that distortions exist within the report. In this second interview with Professor Griffin, recorded from his home in Southern California, I asked him to tell us about this book and what the omissions and distortions are.
Well, it is just what the title says. I deal with the fact that there are enormous both omissions and distortions in there. There are, of course, many different ways to look at that report and many different angles to criticize it from. I look at it from the perspective, of course, of the New Pearl Harbor book, where I looked at various reasons to believe that the Bush administration was itself complicit in 9/11. So I look at the commission report to see whether they give any reasons to lessen that. Did they do anything to undermine any of the arguments that had been summarized in my book?
And what is your answer to that question?
I'm afraid that after I read the report, I was more convinced than before of the government's complicity because of the great lengths gone to in the 9/11 Commission report to omit all the facts, omit any reference to the facts that point towards government complicity. You know, you would think, well, let's talk about them and show that they're false. Well, they don't do that. They just ignore them. Now, there are a few cases where if you know what the issue is, you can tell what they're doing, and they are trying to implicitly undermine an argument. But in those cases, if you happen to know the facts, you can see, well, they're distorting the facts in order to make their argument.
To say the government was complicit in what happened on September 11th of 2001 is a pretty powerful allegation. Can you describe some of the background and the bases that you have for stating that the government was complicit?
Well, there are a whole number. One would be to kind of take them in the order that I talk about them in this new book. If we just look at the government's own conspiracy theory, which is that the planes were hijacked by 19 Muslims under the inspiration of Osama bin Laden, 15 of whom were Saudis, and they put up those names. They're republished in the book with their pictures, and yet we know that six of those alleged hijackers are still alive. They've done interviews.
How do we know this?
Oh, because they've done interviews for British newspapers. They've walked into American embassies and said, I'm not dead. I didn't die in Pennsylvania. I've never been to Pennsylvania. And even these six guys that clearly have proved they're still alive, they're still listed in the book. And the most amazing thing, I couldn't believe, just in the very first few pages of the 9/11 Commission report.
That's where they're listed when you say they're listed in the book.
Yeah, but there's a central section where they give their photographs, and throughout the book, off and on, they talk about various details of their lives. And one of them is named Waleed al-Shira, and in the 9/11 Commission report, they have him on Flight 11, and they speculate that he was one of the hijackers who stabbed some of the people there.
Yet you're saying that he has appeared at United States embassies in various countries to say, this is who I am, and he's allowing himself to be photographed?
I haven't seen a photograph of him, but there are news stories by respectable journalists and reports on the BBC. Whether the BBC actually showed these stories, these stories were broadcast in England back in 2001, shortly after 9/11. It's just in America that we didn't get any information about this.
So continuing with your critique of the 9/11 Commission and its official report, what more can you tell us?
Well, let's take the collapse of the World Trade Center buildings. As I had described in my previous book, The New Pearl Harbor, the collapse of those buildings show all the signs of controlled demolition, that is, where they're deliberately brought down. The commission does not refute that. They don't make any allusion to it whatsoever.
They don't address it?
They do not. They completely do not address it. The closest they come to even mentioning one of those characteristics was when they mentioned that the South Tower collapsed in 10 seconds. Well, this is astounding when you think of it. Here's a 110-story building, and they're saying that the fire somehow caused this steel frame building with these giant core columns to collapse in virtual free fall speed. And so that's a big omission. So they just mention that, but they don't say, gee, that's puzzling or anything about it. Secondly, they distort the truth. Here's one of the biggest distortions in there. They say that these twin towers had hollow cores that were just constituted by the stairwells and the elevators. And so they make it seem like, oh, well, gee, an airplane hits them and then some fire. Well, no wonder they collapsed. They omit the outstanding characteristic of the Twin Towers, which are 47 massive steel columns up the beginning. So the omissions and the distortions are just, I was frankly amazed. They're some of them are beyond belief.
Official commissions, such as the Warren Commission that looked into the death of President John F. Kennedy, carry the name of the chairman of the commission. And the 9/11 Commission was chaired by the former governor of New Jersey, Thomas Kane. Yet you talk about the influence of the executive director of the commission, Philip Zelikow. Can you tell us about him?
This is something the American people need to understand, that first of all, that the commission was basically run by Philip Zelikow, and secondly, that Philip Zelikow is the White House's man inside the commission.
What do you mean by that?
Well, he was a member of the National Security Council of the first Bush administration, and there he became acquainted with Condoleezza Rice. They became so well acquainted, they wrote a book together while they were out of office during the Clinton years. Then he was brought on for the transition for the National Security Council into the new Bush administration. And then he was appointed by President Bush to this board, Foreign Advisory Board. So here he is, essentially a member of the Bush administration, and yet as the executive director, he is the one who decided which lines of research were worth pursuing and which ones weren't. He was the one who assigned, if you went to the commission to give testimony, he would decide who would take your testimony. And as Peter Lance pointed out in his new book, Cover Up, he went to give testimony. So Zelikow assigned him somebody who had a direct interest, somebody who used to be a U.S. attorney and had been the prosecuting attorney in a trial about Ramzi Youssef, whom Lance was testifying about. And Lance was giving information that that contradicted what was said in the trial. So here was a guy who had a personal interest and professional interest in Lance's testimony being suppressed and refuted, and sure enough it was. So, and then Lance had a fellow inside on the staff who was becoming disgruntled and started telling him what was going on, and he reported that Zelikow essentially ran the whole thing. So in my book, rather than just calling it the Cain Commission, I call it the Cain-Zelikow Commission, and refer to the final report then as the Cain-Zelikow Report.
How did Philip Zelikow get the authority to control the commission to the extent that you describe?
I would say partly because, you know, if you remember, originally President Bush tried to appoint Henry Kissinger. In fact, he did. There was a great outcry about Kissinger for all sorts of reasons, one of which were his striking conflicts of interest, where he was a consultant making in the millions of dollars consulting for oil companies, Saudi Arabian oil companies, who had direct interests in building the pipeline in Afghanistan. Kissinger was one of the first ones on the internet to say after 9/11, let's go attack Afghanistan. And Kissinger refused then to reveal his clients. And the President Bush said he didn't have to reveal his clients, but the board in charge said that he did. So Kissinger resigned rather than reveal his clients. So then they appointed Thomas Cain. Well, Thomas Cain is known as a very mild-mannered, to put it mildly, man who is not going to cause any trouble. And so I think probably because of his style, plus the fact that as executive director, Zelikow was in charge of the staff. And you know that on commissions like this, where you've got high-level people who've got jobs, they're doing full-time. Cain remained president of Drew University. He said at the beginning, he says, I'm only going to have one or two days a week to give to this. So the work was done by the staff of 75 people, and Zelikow organized them into teams and directed their research. And that's what this insider that, on the commission told Peter Lance. He said that all the teams except one were essentially controlled by Zelikow.
Those are the staff teams.
Yes, uh-huh. And I say they're the ones who did the work, and most of the 9/11 report is simply a putting together of these various staff reports. Some of them are printed almost word for word. Some of them got modified rather immoderately or significantly after the public staff report and then discussion. But the work was really directed by Zelikow and was done by the various staff members, not by the, you know, the commissioners that we saw on television. Their job was primarily simply to conduct these public sessions.
Today on Radio Curious, we're talking with Professor Emeritus David Ray Griffin from the Claremont School of Theology. He's the author of a book called The 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions. He's also the author of The New Pearl Harbor, Disturbing Questions About the Bush Administration and 9/11. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Professor Griffin, in the 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions, You talk about the role of Marvin Bush, one of the Bush brothers. What was that role?
This was one of the many things the commission does not mention, that both the president's brother Marvin and his cousin were principals in a company originally called Securecom that was in charge of security for the World Trade Center. And so this is significant because if the buildings were brought down by controlled demolition, there would have had to have been times in which the explosives could have been installed. And indeed, as I mentioned, in the new Pearl Harbor, in the second edition, by the way, the updated edition has an additional 30 pages. Particularly in there, I report that people have come forward and said that there were days when there were closeouts in the building where the workers were closed out of many, many floors. And they said they had various reasons for that. So it increases suspicion when you learn that the president's own relatives were in charge of the security.
Professor Griffin, what do you see in the future as an investigation of the events of 9/11 that you're beginning to try and address in your two books?
Well, what I'm calling for is a truly independent investigation, and that's what this was supposed to be. In fact, in the early days, people were referring to it as the 9/11 Independent Commission. But, of course, with Zelikow as executive director, there's no way it was independent from the White House. We've now learned that the chapters were actually, the staff reports were vetted by the White House before they were given to the commission. And then, after the chapters were ready to go to press, they were vetted by the Justice Department. And so this was not an independent commission in any way. So I'm calling for a real investigation, and you know it's amazing. An ordinary murder, where a single person is murdered, is taken with utmost seriousness in at least a lot of cases. And you bring in investigators, you do lie detector tests, you cross-examine various witnesses, you confront people with their apparent lies, and so on. None of that was done here, even though this was the biggest crime ever committed in this country. And yet there are obvious lies that have been told. They've been caught up in some of their lies, and it was like, excuse me. Condoleezza Rice says, we didn't know. Nobody had an idea that anybody was going to take airplanes and use them as weapons. Well, then the people came forward and said, look at this, all these official reports, this has been well discussed. There were even rehearsals of what to do if a plane hit the Pentagon or some other major building. And she says, oh, excuse me, I should have said, I didn't realize this. And there have been worse lies than that. When I get into the book, into the second part, the different accounts, like Rumsfeld has three different accounts of what he was doing that morning, all mutually contradictory and contradicted by Richard Clark's account in Against All Enemies, and so on. And yet none of these people are treated as possible suspects. All of the ones that if you accept the possibility that the government might have been involved in it, all the ones who would be the chief suspects, such as Rumsfeld and Cheney and Bush and Myers, they're treated as authorities. So Myers, quite often in the commission report, they will cite some astounding fact, such as NORAD had only 7 air bases in the whole country that had planes on alert, which would mean that if they had a problem in Chicago, you had to have flights coming from Cape Cod. make astounding comments like this, and they cite it as fact. And you look in the back and you see what kind of evidence they have, and it says, interview with General Myers.
Professor Griffin, why do you think it's happening this way? What's your considered opinion?
Well, of course, that's a huge topic, and to get into this, one would have to know something about the history of United States foreign policy. One would have to know something about the project for the new American century, which Bush and Cheney and Wolfowitz and Pearl were central members of. One would need to know about their document called Rebuilding America's Defenses, published exactly a year before 9/11, in which they said, we need this rapid transformation of the military in order to bring about a Pax Americana on the planet. In other words, we need even a bigger and more powerful military than we have now, and particularly have weapons in space. And they said, but this transformation will probably occur very slowly, absent some catastrophic and catalyzing event, such as a new Pearl Harbor. And then right after 9/11, Bush himself says, I think the Pearl Harbor of the 21st century happened today. You know, how much more explicit do we need it to be made? So in other words, this looks like it was part of what is known in these circles as an incident, that various countries have done this. The Nazis did it, the Russians did it, the Japanese did it, and we've done it several times, like when we wanted to take half of Mexico, and when we wanted to do Cuba and the Gulf of Tonkin. You create an incident, or you use something that happened and turn it into an incident that is used to justify a war. And so I believe that 9/11 was allowed to happen or engineered in order to be a pretext for precisely the war in Afghanistan, the war on Iraq, and then other wars that are on this group's rather fanatical group in charge of the country now on their agenda, such as, of course, they've been talking about Iran and Syria already. In other words, cleaning up the remaining parts of the world that no longer that are not yet under American control.
As a professor emeritus of philosophy and religious theology, this is your first work on political issues. Why are you doing it? What has drawn you to this field?
Well, first of all, I've always been interested in political matters. I just hadn't written about them very much. But it's not quite as sudden as it seems, because back in 1982 or 1983, after the Fate of the Earth came out by Jonathan Schell, and when the Day After came out on television, I started working on what I was then calling a post-nuclear theology, and that started getting me very much into political matters. That is there a way we could get rid of nuclear weapons and still have a secure system? That morphed into a quite different project in 1992, where I started working on concept of global democracy. After 9/11, I decided that something that was a sub-theme in that book, which I was still working on, I decided I had to do a history of American imperialism. And so I had been working on that for about a year and a half before it was brought to my attention that maybe 9/11 was another one of these incidents that had been used. Up till then, I had not, the thought had occurred to me, but I hadn't taken it seriously until I saw the evidence that was put together in Paul Thompson's Timeline, which at that time you could only get on the Internet, but now he has published as the Terror Timeline. And using only mainline sources, he showed that there were hundreds, in fact, thousands of stories that, if you put them together, showed that there were enormous contradictions between various facts and the official account. And so partly I decided that it was incumbent upon me, since I had published a number of books, to see if I could get something published in this area. Even for me, having 25 books in my background, it was very difficult. Many publishers wouldn't even reply to my letter, but I did finally find brave little Interlink books, and they published it.
Professor David Ray Griffin, I want to thank you for joining us on Radio Curious. And before we close, can you tell us about an interesting book that you've read lately?
Well, I've mentioned two here, so let me mention both of them. There is Peter Lance's book, Cover Up, which I use quite a bit in the conclusion of my new book. And then Paul Thompson, it's called The Terror Timeline, Year by Year, Day by Day, Minute by Minute, A Comprehensive Chronicle of the Road to 9/11 and America's Response. And this is a huge volume, about 600 pages, but is indispensable for anybody who wants to do really serious study of 9/11.
Professor David Ray Griffin, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Curious.
You're welcome.
David Ray Griffin is a professor emeritus from the Claremont School of Theology and the author of The 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions. He recommends two books, Cover Up by Peter Lance and The Terror Timeline, Year by Year, Day by Day, Minute by Minute, A Comprehensive Chronicle of the Road to 9/11 and America's Response. You may learn more about these issues raised by Professor Griffin in the website www.911timeline.net. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious are available for $10 each. At Radio Curious, we appreciate your cards, letters, suggestions, and ideas for future programs. Our address is Radio Curious, Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, that's UKIAH, California, 95482. Our phone is 707-462-6541, and our email is curious@pacific.net. You've been listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel.